So I had the great blessing last weekend to be in Red Lake Falls, Minnesota for my 55th high school reunion. Yes, it's true. I don't want to believe it, but it is true. So I got to see a lot of my classmates. It was wonderful. We shared lots of stories, some war stories, and perhaps there were some exaggerations, I don't know, but it was good. So, as you know, I grew up as a Lutheran in that small town, but I offered Mass at St. Joseph's Catholic Church in Red Lake Falls. And so before I began my homily, I told them, I said, you know, when Jesus visited Nazareth, he said a prophet has no honor in his own hometown and among his own kinfolk. And of course, they all laughed at that, you know. And then I said, well, I look out here and I don't see any of my kinfolk, so I guess I'm okay, you know. Anyway, so did the Mass, normal homily, that kind of thing. After Mass, the Catholic daughters had a breakfast. So I went to the breakfast, I got my eggs and my biscuit and everything. And my older brother Warren's classmate grabbed me and he said, hey Father, let me straighten you out on something. Mass here is 45 minutes. You went over an hour. So then I said, well, you know, if we get to heaven, we're going to be worshiping God 24/7. I think 1 hour a week is okay. And he looked at me and says, well, if we get to heaven. So anyway, Jesus said, a prophet has no honor in his own hometown. And so I know if I'd been from Minneapolis, St. Paul, he wouldn't have said anything. But this is a hometown boy, and he had to straighten him out. So there we go. But I don't see myself ever doing a 45-minute Sunday Mass. But anyway, that's what he wanted. The Catholic Church remains the largest church in the United States. The second largest faith group is the Southern Baptist Convention. It is said, however, and I believe this to be true, that the actual second largest church in the United States is comprised of fallen away Catholics. A sad statistic indeed, for I truly agree with this assertion from Catholic Link that says, once you understand the Eucharist, you can never leave the church. Not because the church won't let you, but because your heart won't let you. Today in our gospel, we're continuing to read through John chapter 6. This is our second session in John 6, the second of five. The context of this passage is the aftermath of the feeding of the 5,000. The people had followed him across the Sea of Galilee to Capernaum. Jesus knew why they sought him and responds to them by saying, you seek me not because you saw signs, but because you ate your fill of the loaves. He's telling them, the reason you're looking for me is not because you saw the sign, the miraculous feeding of the 5,000. That sign, the feeding of the 5,000, pointed you to a deeper reality, a deeper truth about who I am. But you're only coming to me because you ate your fill yesterday and you want more food. So in his words, Jesus issues a kind of gentle rebuke and tells them not to labor for food which perishes, but for the food that endures for eternal life, which the Son of Man will give to you. Jesus is trying to lead them beyond the earthly food of loaves that were multiplied and fed to them, to the heavenly food, to the supernatural food that he has not yet given them as the Son of Man, which of course he's going to do in the Eucharist. So the people ask Jesus, what sign do you do that we may see and we believe you? What work do you perform? Now this question is almost comical because just 24 hours before, Jesus performed a sign. He fed them with the multiplication of the loaves. But they press him because they want him to perform another miracle, and they lay a challenge before him. They basically say that our fathers ate manna in the wilderness, as it is written, that he had given them bread from heaven. So here they quote the scriptures back to him. They're quoting Exodus chapter 16, which is the account of Moses giving the people the manna from heaven. So what they're doing is they're essentially throwing down the gauntlet. They're in effect saying, hey, if you are the Messiah, if you really are the new Moses, then we want you to give us manna just like Moses gave our fathers manna in the desert. And once they bring up the manna, that's the segue Jesus uses to lead them into the mystery of the Eucharist and the mystery of his identity as the true manna from heaven, the new manna from heaven, the new manna of the Messiah. So he corrects them slightly and says, well, actually, it wasn't Moses who gave you bread. It was ultimately God who gave you the manna from heaven. Then he says that the bread of God is that which comes down from heaven and gives life to the world. And they respond to him by saying, Lord, give us this bread always. Now, why might they say, give us this bread always? Notice that there is a second challenge here. Any first century Jew would have known that in the Old Testament, the miracle of the manna was a temporary miracle. In Exodus chapter 16, they begin to receive the manna after leaving Egypt. But once they get to the promised land 40 years later in the book of Joshua, chapters 4 and 5, as they cross the Jordan River, the miracle of the manna ceases. The miracle lasted for 40 years, just for the period that they were in the desert. The second they cross over the River Jordan, the manna ceased. So what the crowds are doing here is saying to Jesus, we want you not only to do what Moses did, we want you to one-up Moses. We want you to do one better than Moses. We want you to give us manna always, not just for 40 years, but forever. This then is the springboard for Jesus beginning the famous bread of life discourse. In John 6, verse 35, most scholars identify this verse as the formal beginning of the bread of life discourse. Once they ask Jesus to give them the manna forever, Jesus responds by saying, I am the bread of life. He who comes to me shall not hunger, and he who believes in me shall never thirst. Jesus is referring to himself as the new manna from heaven. So he's taking the manna that they brought up and using it as an image to reveal to them his identity as the Messiah who has come down from heaven. In other words, he's not an earthly Messiah. He's not just a Davidic king. He's a divine Messiah who has heavenly origin. And he himself is the true bread from heaven that he's going to give life to the world, that's going to usher in the age of salvation. In this case, he's telling them, not only am I going to bring the manna, I am the true manna from heaven. I am the bread of God that gives life to the world, that feeds you and quenches your hunger and your thirst in a way that miraculous loaves I multiplied for you yesterday could never do, because this bread is going to give you eternal life. It's going to feed you. It's not just going to give you natural life that passes away. It's going to give you eternal life that lasts forever and ever. It's not surprising, then, that our first reading comes from Exodus chapter 16, the famous account of miraculous manna in the desert. The text that we just heard says that the people of Israel murmured against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness, saying that they wished they could go back to Egypt again, where they could sit by the flesh pots and eat their fill. Amazingly, and this is a lesson for all of us, this complaining and murmuring takes place right after God saves the Israelites from the hands of Pharaoh and certain death at the hands of his charioteers. And as you remember, God mercifully does not respond in anger to their complaints, but rather provides a twofold miracle: quail in the evening and manna in the morning. It's important that we reflect on this a little bit here, because we often remember the manna, but we forget about the quail. This is a twofold miracle, and it's striking, and it's very significant. It's bread from heaven and flesh from heaven. So when Christ comes in the Eucharist, we're going to see this in John chapter 6, he's going to use the language of flesh and the language of bread to reveal the mystery of what he's going to give us as the Messiah, a bread that is not just bread, but also his own flesh. The Eucharist is also a twofold miracle, bread from heaven and flesh from heaven. the flesh of Christ, body, blood, soul, and divinity. Also, in Exodus chapter 16, when the Israelites go out in the morning, they see this manna on the ground, this fine, flake-like thing, fine as hoarfrost on the ground. Elsewhere it says that it was like wafers made with honey. Their initial response is, in the Hebrew language, man hu, what is it? What is this bread? So when the people say, man hu, what is this bread? That's a question that in a sense, echoes down throughout the ages, all the way into the time of Christ. Just as they say, what is it? What kind of bread is this? Is it ordinary or is it extraordinary? Is it natural or is it supernatural? Is it earthly or is it heavenly? What is it? Moses answered by saying, it is the bread which the Lord has given you to eat. The same question echoes down from the centuries to us today. And the way you answer that question really determines how you live every day of your life. The Eucharist, what is it? What is this bread? Is it ordinary bread or is it extraordinary? Is it ordinary food or is it the body and blood, soul and divinity of Christ? How you see the Eucharist, how you answer that question, man hu, what is it, is one of the fundamental questions of the Christian life that we must answer. It impacts every aspect of our lives of faith and our life of discipleship. When a friend described the Eucharist as a pretty good symbol, the American novelist Flannery O'Connor told her, if it's just a symbol, to hell with it. So I ask you this morning, what is your answer to that question, man hu, what is it? And how does the answer impact your life? Does your answer make a difference in your life? And how?